Day 4. "Caroline," he said, his voice low and menacing, "you're the head of this family, and you got a decision to make. Now, I need them trees, and I mean to have them. I've offered you a good price for them, and I ain't going to haggle over it. I know y'all can use the money. Dr. Thomas tells me that Mary's not well." He hesitated a moment, and then hissed venomously, "And if something should happen to David..." "All right," Big Ma said, her voice trembling. "All right, Mr. Anderson."
"No, Big Ma," I cried, leaping onto the porch. "You can't let him cut our trees."
Mr. Anderson grasped the arms of the rocker, his knuckles chalk white. "You certainly ain't taught none of your young'uns how to behave, Caroline," he said curtly. "You children go on to the back," Mama said, shooing us away.
"No, Mama," Stacy said. "He gonna cut them all down. Me and Cassie heard him. He say so in the woods."
"I won't let him cut them," I threatened. "I won't let him. The trees are my friends, and ain't no mean old white man gonna touch my trees." Mama's hands went roughly around my body as she carried me off to the room.
"Now hush," she said, her dark eyes flashing wildly. "I've told you how dangerous it is." She broke off in mid-sentence. She stared at me a moment, and then hugged me tightly and went back to the porch. Stacy joined me a few seconds later. We sat there in the heat of the quiet room, listening miserably as the first whack of an axe echoed against the trees. And that night I was awakened by soft sounds outside my window. I reached for Big Ma, but she wasn't there. Hurrying to the window, I saw Mama and Big Ma standing in the yard in their night clothes, and Stacy, fully dressed, sitting atop Lady, our golden mare. By the time I got outside, Stacy was gone.
"Mama, where's Stacy?" I cried.
"Be quiet, Cassie. You'll wake Christopher, John, and Little Man."
"But where is he going?"
"He's going to get Papa," Mama said.
"Now be quiet." "Come on, Stacy, boy," I whispered. "Ride for me, too."
As the dust billowed after him, Mama said, "I should have gone myself. He's so young." Big Ma put her arm around Mama. "Now, Mary, you know you couldn't have gone. Mr. Anderson would miss you if he come by and see you ain't here. You done right now. Don't worry. That boy'll be just fine." 3 days passed, hot and windless. Mama forbade any of us to go into the forest, so Christopher, John, Little Man, and I spent the slow, restless days hovering as close to the dusty road as we dared, listening to the foreign sounds of steel against the trees and the thunderous roar of those ancient loved ones as they crashed upon the earth. Sometimes Mama would scold us and tell us to come back to the house, but even she could not ignore the continuous pounding of the axes against the trees, or the sight of the loaded lumber wagons rolling out of the forest. In the middle of the washing or ironing or hoeing, she would look up sorrowfully and listen, and then turn toward the road, searching for some sign of Papa and Stacy. On the fourth day, before the sun had risen, bringing its cloak of miserable heat, I saw her walking alone toward the woods. I ran after her. She did not send me back.
"Mama," I said, "how sick are you?"
Mama took my hand.
"Remember when you had the flu and felt so sick?"
"Yes'm."
"And when I gave you some medicine, you got well soon after?"
"Yes'm."
"Well, that's how sick I am. As soon as I get my medicine, I'll be all well again. And that'll be soon now that Papa's coming home," she said, giving my hand a gentle little squeeze.
The quiet surrounded us as we entered the forest. Mama clicked on the flashlight, and we walked silently along the cow path to the pond. And there, just beyond the pond, pockets of open space loomed before us.
"Mama!"
"I know, baby, I know." On the ground lay countless trees. Trees that had once been such strong, tall things, so strong that I could fling my arms partially around one and feel safe and secure. So tall and leafy green that their boughs had formed a forest temple, and old, so old that Indians had once built fires at their feet and had sung happy songs of happy days, so old they had hidden fleeing black men in the night and listened to their sad tales of a foreign land. In the cold of winter, when the ground lay frozen, they had sung their frosty ballads of years gone by, or on a muggy, sweat-drenched day, their leaves had rippled softly, lazily, like restless green fingers strumming at a guitar, echoing their epic tales. But now they would sing no more. They lay forever silent upon the ground. Those trees that remained standing were like defeated warriors mourning their fallen dead, but soon they too would fall, for the white X's had been placed on nearly every one. "Oh, dear, dear trees," I cried as the gray light of the rising sun fell on ghostly shadows over the land. The tears rolled hot down my cheeks. Mama held me close, and I felt her body tremble, and I knew she was crying, too. When our tears eased, we turned sadly toward the house. As we emerged from the forest, we could see two small figures waiting impatiently on the other side of the road. As soon as they spied us, they hurried across the road to meet us. "Mama, you and Cassie was in the forest?" little man accused. "Big Mama told us." End day four. Day five. "How was it?" asked Christopher John, rubbing sleep from his eyes. "Was it spooky?" "Spooky and empty," I said listlessly. "Mama, me and Christopher John want to see too," little man declared. "No, baby," Mama said softly as we crossed the road. "The men'll be down there soon, and I don't want y'all underfoot." "But Mama," little man started to protest, "when Papa comes home and the men are gone, then you can go. But until then, you stay out of there. You hear me, little man Logan?" "Yes'm," little man reluctantly replied. But the sun had been up only an hour when little man decided that he could not wait for Papa to return. "Mama said we wasn't to go down there," Christopher John warned.
"Cassie did," little man cried.
"But she was with Mama, wasn't you, Cassie?" "Well, I'm going too," said little man. "Everybody's always going someplace excepting me." And off he went. Christopher John and I ran after him, down the narrow cow path and around the pond we chased. But neither of us were fast enough to overtake little man before he reached the lumbermen. "Hey, you kids, get away from there," Mr. Anderson shouted when he saw us. "Now y'all going back home," he said, stopping in front of the little man.
"We are home," I said. "You're the ones who's on our land."
"Claude," Mr. Anderson said to one of the black lumbermen, "take these kids home." And then he pushed little man out of the way, and little man pushed back. And Mr. Anderson looked down, startled that a little black boy would do such a thing. He shoved little man a second time, and little man fell into the dirt. Little man looked down at his clothing covered with sawdust and dirt and wailed, "You got my clothes dirty!" I rushed toward Mr. Anderson, my fist and a mighty hammer, shouting, "You ain't got no right to push on little man. Why don't you push on somebody your own size, like me, you old—" the man called Claude put his hand over my mouth, carried me away. Christopher John trailed behind us, tugging at the man's shirt.
"Put her down. Hey, mister, put Cassie down."
The man carried me all the way to the pond. "Now," he said, "you and your brothers get on home before y'all get hurt. Go on, get." As the man walked away, I looked around. "Where, little man?" Christopher John looked around, too.
"I don't know," he said. "I thought he was behind me."
Back we ran toward the lumberman. We found little man's clothing first, folded neatly by a tree. Then we saw little man dragging a huge stick, heading straight for Mr. Anderson.
"Little man, come back here," I called.
But little man did not stop. Mr. Anderson stood alone, barking orders, unaware of the oncoming little man.
"Little man, oh, little man, don't!"
It was too late. Little man swung the stick as hard as he could against Mr. Anderson's leg. Mr. Anderson let out a howl and reached to where he thought little man's collar was, but of course, little man had no collar.
"Run, man," Christopher John and I shouted. "Run!"
"Why, you little—" Mr. Anderson cried, grabbing at little man, but little man was too quick for him. He slid right through Mr. Anderson's legs. Tom stood by, his face crinkling into an amused grin.
"Hey, y'all,"
Mr. Anderson yelled to the lumberman,
"Claude, get that kid."
But sure-footed little man dodged the groping hands of the lumberman as easily as if he were skirting mud puddles. Over tree stumps and around legs and through legs he dashed. But in the end, there were too many lumbermen for him, and he was handed over to Mr. Anderson. For the second time, Christopher John and I went to the little man's rescue.
"Put him down,"
we ordered, charging the lumbermen. I was captured much too quickly. But Christopher John, furious at seeing little man handled so roughly by Mr. Anderson, managed to elude the clutches of the lumberman until he was fully upon Mr. Anderson. Then, with his mightiest thrust, he kicked Mr. Anderson solidly in the shins, not once, but twice, before the lumberman could pull him away. Mr. Anderson was fuming. He slowly took off his wide leather belt. Christopher John, little man, and I looked woefully at the belt, then at each other. Little man and Christopher John fought to escape, but I closed my eyes and waited the whining of a heavy belt as it painfully bit against my skin.
What was he waiting for?
I started to open my eyes, but then the zinging whirl of the belt began, and I tensed, awaiting its fearful sting. But just as the leather tip lashed into my leg, a deep, familiar voice said, "Put that belt down, Anderson." I opened my eyes.
"Papa!"
"Let the children go," Papa said. He was standing on a nearby ridge with a strange black box in his hands. Stacy was behind him, holding the reins to Lady. The chopping stopped as well as all eyes turned toward Papa. "They've been right meddlesome," Mr. Anderson said. "They need teaching how to act." "Any teaching, I'll do it. Now let them go." Mr. Anderson looked down at little man struggling to get away. Smiling broadly, he motioned our release. "Okay, David," he said. End day 5. Day 6. As we ran up the ridge to Papa, Mr. Anderson said, "It's good to have you home, boy." Papa said nothing until we were safely behind him. "Take them home, Stacy."
"But, Papa..."
"Do like I say, son." Stacy herded us away from the men. When we were far enough away so Papa couldn't see us, Stacy stopped and handed me Lady's reins. "Y'all go on home," he said. "I gotta go help Papa." "Papa don't need no help," I said. "He told you to come with us." "But you don't know what he's going to do."
"What?"
I asked. "He's going to blow up the forest if they don't get out of here. So go on home, or y'all be safe."
"How's he going to do that?" asked little man.
"We've been setting sticks of dynamite since the middle of the night. We ain't even been up to the house, 'cause Papa wanted the sticks planted and covered over before the men came. Now, Cassie, you take them back to the house. Do like I tell you for once, will you?" Without waiting another word, he was gone.
"I want to see," little man announced.
"I don't," protested Christopher John.
"Come on," I said.
We tied the mare to a tree and then belly crawled back to where we could see Papa and joined Stacy in the brush.
"Cassie, I told you, what's Papa doing?"
The black box was now set up on the sawed-off tree stump. Papa's hands were tightly grasping a T-shaped instrument that went into it.
"What's that thing?" little man asked.
"It's a plunger," Stacy whispered. "If Papa presses it, the whole forest will go poof." Mouths went dry and our eyes went wide. Mr. Anderson's eyes were wide, too.
"You're bluffing, David," he said. "You ain't going to push that plunger."
"One thing you can't seem to understand, Anderson," Papa said, "is that a black man always got to be ready to die. And it don't make me no difference if I die today or tomorrow, just as long as I die right." Mr. Anderson laughed uneasily. The lumberman moved nervously away.
"I mean what I say," Papa said. "Ask anyone, I always mean what I say."
"He sure do, Mr. Anderson," Claude said, eyeing the black box. "He always do."
"Shut up,"
Mr. Anderson snapped. "The rest of y'all stay put." Then turning back to Papa, he smiled cunningly.
"I'm sure and me can work something out, David."
"Ain't nothing to be worked out," said Papa.
"Now look here, David, your mama and me, we got us a contract." "There ain't no more contract," Papa replied coldly. "Now either you get out or I blow it up. That's it."
"He means it, Mr. Anderson," another frightened lumberman ventured. "He's crazy, and he sure enough means it."
"You know what would happen to you, boy?" Mr. Anderson exploded, his face beat red again. "Threatening a white man like this?"
Papa said nothing. He just stood there, his hands firmly on the plunger, staring down at Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson could not bear the stare. He turned away, cursing Papa.
"You're a fool, David, a crazy fool."
Then he looked around at the lumbermen. They shifted their eyes and would not look at him.
"Maybe we better leave, Mr. Anderson," Tom said quietly.
Mr. Anderson glanced at Tom, then turned back to Papa, and said as lightly as he could,
"All right, David, all right, it's your land. We'll just take the logs we got cut and get out."
He motioned to the men. "Hey, let's get to moving and get those logs out of here before this crazy fool gets us all killed."
"No,"
Papa said. Mr. Anderson stopped, knowing they could not have heard correctly.
"What do you say?"
"You ain't taking one more stick out of this forest."
"Now look here, you heard me."
"But you can't sell all these logs, David,"
Mr. Anderson exclaimed incredulously. Papa said nothing, just cast that piercing look on Mr. Anderson.
"Look, I'm a fair man. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you another $35 and even $100. Now that's fair, ain't it?"
"I'll see them rot first."
"But..."
"That's my last word," Papa said, tightening his grip on the plunger. Mr. Anderson swallowed hard.
"You won't always have that black box, David," he warned. "You know that, don't you?"
"That may be, but it won't matter none, 'cause I'll have my self-respect." Mr. Anderson opened his mouth to speak, but no sound came. Tom and the lumbermen were quietly moving away, putting their gear in an empty lumber wagon. Mr. Anderson looked again at the black box, and finally, his face ashen, he too walked away. Papa stood unmoving until the wagons and the men were gone. And then, when the sound of the last wagon rolling over the dry leaves could no longer be heard, and a hollow silence filled the air, he slowly removed his hands from the plunger and looked up at the remaining trees standing like lonely sentries in the morning.
"Dear, dear old trees," I heard him call softly, "would you ever sing again?"
I waited, but the trees gave no answer. End of story.